You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Like it before, and when it was over, I'd never want another one.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kel Smith, and with me today is Brandon Cooley.
Hey, guys.
All right. So today this week we are doing two different episodes. We're doing a retrospective on Apocalypse Now and Peter Jackson's King Kong. And for those who are wondering, why are we combining those two movies together? They really only have one similarity to them, and that is one of the characters reads the books. In Peter Jackson's King Kong, one of the characters read the book that Apocalypse Now is based off of, or loosely based off of. So why are we talking about these two movies? Well, in honor of Kong Skull Island coming out last weekend, we thought it would be appropriate to talk about the two movies that are kind of that Kong Skull Island are evoking. So with that said, Brandon, why do you think Kong Skull Island is trying to evoke the tone of Apocalypse Now?
Why not? It's a great idea.
Well, I mean, you would do that for a comedy.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Tropic Thunder kind of paced there. It was a comedic version of Apocalypse Now. Like,
they're fair, making it like that. Fair, but you wouldn't do that for like Titanic or an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. I mean, you wouldn't do it for a massive machismo movie, but it's interesting that the interesting choice that in order to stick with the 70s aesthetic, they went with the Apocalypse Now aesthetic.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and I'm not like, they've done several versions of King Kong at this point, so I guess they had to like change it up somehow. I mean, the last one in 2005 took place in the 30s when the movie was actually made. So
when the original movie was made.
When the original, yeah. So I guess they kind of had to think of a variation of how to not repeat the previous two movies, or not the previous two, but the one from 76, the original 2005, you know, they had to find a different way to do it. I mean, it works really well in Skull Island, but we're reviewing the other two, right? We're reviewing Apocalypse Now.
Well, we're working on Apocalypse Now, so so for me, I feel like I just said, like it, you know, Kong Skull Island takes place in the 70s because we needed to kind of get a little bit closer in the legendary monsters universe, as we'll talk about in the next episode. But
and what is this universe? I'm confused about what this is. Like,
oh, it's you remember Gareth Edwards' Godzilla that came out a couple years ago?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's apparently this new King Kong is in the same universe that's in Godzilla.
Okay.
And so will Godzilla 2, and then ultimately, it'll lead to Kong versus Godzilla.
Okay, sure. Why not? I like both of them so far. So,
yeah, that'll be the Avengers of this universe.
I never knew they were connected, but okay.
Well, I mean, Monarch is the corporation, or not corporation, the secret organization, as I do that in quotation marks, mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, that John Goodman works for. And then Monarch is where Ken Watanabe works for. And so.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I never caught that in the original Godzilla. I saw it once in 2014. So.
I'm literally just rewatching it now so I can be caught up. So, but anyway, Apocalypse Now. Let me ask this, how did this movie get made, Brandon? Because you have lived with this movie a lot longer than I have.
Well, I haven't lived with it, but
well, you've
I
seen
saw the
it.
documentary Hearts of Darkness. Yeah, it's one of the most difficult movies. It's one of the most difficult movies they've ever made in terms of the production, the difficulties with that. Besides the production, I mean, even like Marlon Brando supposedly went crazy and Martin Sheen had a heart attack during filming. And just the production itself, they had to borrow planes, or no, they had to borrow helicopters from the Philippine army nearby, and they would just occasionally just drift off and go somewhere else to fight a battle halfway through filming. There were, I think, typhoons maybe or hurricanes that would interrupt the set and destroy portions of it. I mean, just everything you could
I think
possibly think of.
typhoons, because they don't call I know typhoons and hurricanes are very similar, but I don't
Yeah,
but
yeah.
they call them typhoons in the East.
I think it was typhoon destroyed half the set at one point. A lot of stuff. That documentary is very interesting.
You know, just typical studio stuff. Just typical
Well,
old
yeah, it's the
location
worst
stuff.
case scenario for a film production. I mean, everything could have went wrong, and even the ending by that point, they just ran out of footage. They just couldn't think of anything else to film, or not. They couldn't. They knew what to film, but Marlon Brando wasn't cooperating. They weren't like they're running out of ideas. He kind of wrote himself into a corner with that last, not third act, but the last scene. I like the ending, but some people don't. Yeah, it's just an interesting making of kind of feature. They whole movie dedicated to it. So.
That is so interesting you bring up the ending, but before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let me ask this. So what are so my overall thoughts on this movie are like, damn, this is a
Yeah.
fantastic movie. I mean, Martin Sheen giving a career best performance. Even Marlon Brando, like, yeah, you were mentioning he went insane,
He's still good though.
but yeah,
He went insane.
I
Yeah.
mean, it was really cool. I mean, it was really good.
I mean, the guy's
And
insane, the character is, so why not, you know?
yeah. And well, there's a lot, well, I'll get to it, but there is a logic to his insanity, as I find, as I kind of read into it. But overall, I loved the world that Francis had, or Francis Ford Coppola have created. And some of you may have known that I don't really care for Coppola that much. I think he's made a bunch of good movies in the 70s, and then he plummeted really hard
Yeah,
in
but you still have to see those four great movies, though. The Godfather movies, Conversation. Now you saw that. I mean, you have to see those four to really understand Coppola. I mean,
I know, but will we still be talking about Steven Spielberg if he only did Sugarland Express, Jaws, Close Encounters?
well, I think we would be if he made Jaws, E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Schindler's List. I think we would still be talking about him, but just those four movies. I mean, Coppola, those four of his movies are like some of the best ever made. So, I mean, that's or what four of my favorite ones. So.
Right, but I talk about him as a whole in the career, like.
Yeah, I never do that though. I don't really care about the whole career. I just care about different movies they've made.
All
I mean, all I
right.
need is four great movies. I'm good.
I mean, you need three movies to establish your style, but after that, you pretty much it's up to you, like how we judge your whole career as a whole. But
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine to like Coppola in, but for me, it's like I've seen some of his work from the 80s and a little bit of his more recent stuff, and I'm just not been impressed.
I'm just not going to watch him. I mean, that's my solution. I like Coppola's his 70s movies, and that's about it. So,
All right, Brandon, just live in denial.
but there's no reason to watch them if they're bad. I mean, why bother? I mean, I think Cotton Club was supposed to be decent, or The Outsiders maybe. I don't know. I can't remember which ones are supposed to be okay. But
The
I mean,
Outsiders
Godfather Part
is
Three was
awful.
kind of disappointing. You know, Part Three is actually okay, but it's just so disappointing compared to the original ones. Besides that, I haven't seen any of his later work, but I'm just not going to watch them. I mean, there's no reason to if they're bad, you know.
Well, I mean, if you're a f I hate to push this on you, but if you're a fan, you want to see, you know, the good and the bad and the ugly. You know, if you're a
Don't
fan of
believe
their
in that.
stuff.
I mean, I've skipped Spielberg's bad movies. I've skipped Awakenings, or not Awakenings, that's the good one. Is it
No,
Awakening?
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the
Anyway, you
Richard
know what I mean.
Dreyfuss one, right? Always.
Always, yeah. Awakenings is the De Niro movie that came out a year later. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I skipped Spielberg's bad movies. I've skipped Scorsese's bad movies. I mean, that's just, you know, no reason to watch them.
All right. So let's move on, to the movie as a whole. You story-wise, I truly do enjoy this movie, even though I'm still trying to figure out what the plot is. It seems that the plot is that Martin Sheen's character is after Kurtz, who is played by Marlon Brando, and ultimately it's just a chase movie, but within that it's a very much, you know, he's going to hell essentially to find this man, and ultimately, you know, even though he knows it's like this whole mission is a lost cause, but he wants to find darkness in himself. Like, he wants to confront it because it's his, because that's what he feels like is his journey and his, you know, epitome of, you know, of who he is. So is that what you think the movie is? Because that's what I think of.
The plot's pretty simple. I mean, it's just him trying to find Kurtz and basically kill him. They tell him that from the very beginning. That's his mission. I see it as kind of the opposite of Saving Private Ryan, where they're supposed to save one person throughout this war. And in this case, he's supposed to assassinate this one person in this whole, you know, in the Vietnam War. So that's the basic plot. In terms of his own, like, inner struggles or anything, like, it's been a while since I saw the movie. What I remember of it, though, is he is, like, suffering. He's, like, an alcoholic, right? He's, like, the opening scene, I remember him kind of just going off the deep end and just kind of not being able to take the war anymore. Like,
well, it's really the way I interpret it is him coping with it, like him punching the mirror, him trying different karate style moves, and the way I interpret it is it's him trying to cope with it, but he's still like insane, but he's still not insane, but he's like, he still feels like he's there even though he's not, and he wants to be, even though when he's there he doesn't want to be there. So it's an interesting portrait of a veteran, especially from the Vietnam War. And that's really what I take away from Apocalypse Now, is it's a very intriguing, very insightful portrait that I feel like was needed. It was necessary to bring into, even though it arrived a few years late, but still it was very contemporary for its time. And I still think it works today. I still think you can apply that portrait to, you know, any soldier that has had a really rough time in the war, and he's trying to confront him, and that soldier is trying to confront, like, his own fears and his own personal demons. And going to the ending, spoilers, everyone, this is a, how old? Nearly 40-year-old movie?
Well, it's a pretty old movie, so they should have already seen it. I guess some people haven't, but
But the ending is he does find Kurtz, and he does have like little chats with him, sort of. I say that in quotes, like sort of chats. Like, it's really more Kurtz talking and then Martin Sheen just listening. But the entire time it's, you know, him literally spelling out Kurtz's own insanity. That's how it really is. But within it, you kind of see the insanity of it.
If I had to like jump to a conclusion of what the themes of this movie, like, basically from what I remember, Kurtz is like, he's created his own cult basically within the jungle, and has justified everything he's doing. Cause if I remember right, he's committed treason at that point. He's killed fellow soldiers.
It was like double agents or something, or
yeah, it was something like that. He's committed treason because that's why they're trying to kill him. That's the only reason why they would. So I guess the point of the movie is that the Vietnam War was different from other wars because there was a lot of what's the right word for it? Not just friendly fire on each other, but there was a lot
trench
of just
warfare?
It was chaotic. It was not like a normal type of war.
Trench warfare. Not trench.
Well, trench warfare is World War One. That's
I know what you're talking about. Jungle warfare, but there's a term for it. I can't remember it.
Guerrilla warfare. Yeah, it's where basically
it.
Like
yeah, that's it.
It was chaotic. You know, there was no like clear goal. You know, for the soldiers, there was no like when they would take over like a territory, it would just be taken back over the next day. You know, so I guess the whole movie kind of illustrates the point. What's the point of just this mission? You know, what's the point of even bothering to go and assassinate Kurtz.
Especially, you know, in the end when he still is him, the character of Martin Sheen, he still is himself. He still is, you know, I don't want to say like he's still in a sedated mood.
Mm-hmm.
When we first met him. So really to that conclusion, there's no change to the character. He killed someone. He has confronted his fear. He's confronted something that he thinks is horrible, but in the end, he still is the same person. So there's no end to his arc other than to find that there was no point in all of this. It was just another mission. It was just another thing to do.
Well, are you familiar with the original Heart of Darkness book?
No, like, I was not treasured with reading that book.
I haven't read it. Yeah. But I mean, basically what the gist of it is that it's the same plot as Apocalypse Now. It takes place when King Leopold from the King of Belgium, I think this is like 19th century, 1870s, I think. He took over the Congo and announced it as his own private property. And if you watch the movie Tarzan from last year, that's actually the time period when that happened. That takes place in the Congo, if I remember right. And it's like one of the most brutal periods like in the whole century. It was not genocide, but a lot of people were killed in that process of trying to mine diamonds and resources. And so I guess the point of the movie and the reason why he adapted it into the Vietnam War is that even 100 years later,
we're still doing the same shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Just it's a different goal at this point. It's the same, like, because it's the same plot as the book, you know, just taking in that context, Vietnam.
Right. So I think we're good here in terms of the movie review.
The filmmaking is what I love about Apocalypse Now. I mean, like, I think in terms of war movies about Vietnam, Platoon has a better like message or a better like. And Deer Hunter and Platoon have better characters, but Apocalypse Now is just a great piece of filming. The filmmaking in it is just amazing. The portrayal of war, you know.
That's all. And really, it feels like everyone gave their 100%. Literally, like you feel like the world they're living. And I mean. And normally I'm like, I don't really care to see. There's no way I can get immersed in a world if I'm watching it on a television screen. This one I did. I actually did got pretty into it, you know, and I was pretty much into it the entire time, admiring the cinematography, admiring the production design, the effects of it all. I mean, it was just a massive scale film that just truly blew me away in terms of how big and how ambitious it got. And to hear that there were typhoons and actors having heart attacks, actors going insane, hearing all that, you're just like, and then you hear, you know, I started watching the Apocalypse Now commentary for the movie where Francis Ford Coppola goes into like how it was just, even after production, he was still fighting the battle with the marketing and journalists of that he was still having to fight for his movie because the movie just kept constantly getting delayed, getting, you know, more and more over budget. And the only really way he could defend himself was to put a work in progress cut of the movie at Cannes.
Yeah.
So to hear even then, like even after the rigorous filming, he had to like show a work print of the movie, you know, and it won the Palme d'Or. Palme d'Or. And to hear all that, it's just like, holy shit. Like, it's just like amazing, you know. And I really do feel like Francis Ford Coppola gave everything he got to that movie. And I think he sacrificed a lot, you know, to make that all work.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite war movies, too, because it doesn't follow the conventional, like, cliches that most war movies have. Because really what it is, it's a road movie, or a boat movie, I guess you could say. They kind of just keep going down the river, and they meet up with these different, like, I mean, they meet up with different, like, platoons, actually, in the war. They may come across a tiger in one scene, you know. They just kind of keep going from, like, place to place until they finally reach Kurtz. And it's a unique way to have a war movie play out, you know. Because most of the time it's just very basic, like you have five soldiers, you know, together and they just go through this war, and it's like, that can be good sometimes, but I mean, this is a very unique take on a war like that, you know, like a top secret mission kind of thing, you know, within the Vietnam War. So
I'm still going to watch this movie. Whenever I find a theater that will show this movie, I'm going to definitely be there to watch this movie.
Oh yeah, I will too. Yeah.
But you know, some of the more bigger surprises, I didn't know Lawrence Fishburne was in this movie.
Yeah, he is. Barely recognizable as it was a long time ago. Yeah.
He is so young and thin. It's hilarious. And then
Harrison Ford too.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that was a surprise. And then to see Dennis Hopper in there.
Yeah. Playing. Yeah, he was hopped up on coke the whole time when they were filming.
I believe it because he just has so much energy throughout that movie. Or
my favorite performance has to be the Robert Duvall coming in about an hour into it, halfway through. Just great performance.
Yeah, that was the part where I was like, yeah, I'm really into this world. Like him and his whole speech about napalm in the morning. I was like, yeah, I'm into this world. I'm 100% into it. And
don't they just start surfing like after the battle, like when they're on the beach?
Yeah. I mean,
stuff like that. I just love the details like that in this movie. Yeah.
I mean, things are still going on around them, but they're surfing.
Yeah, they're surfing within the battle. Yeah, right before it's over. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. So, do you have any more final thoughts on Apocalypse Now?
Well, I wish I could have watched it before we did the podcast because it's one of my favorite movies. But I had a midterm to study for, so I didn't really have time to. I don't think I had any copies of it to watch because you borrowed the DVD.
Your dossier.
It's not on Netflix, so yeah. But yeah, great movie, one of my favorites. So
sorry about that, Brandon.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
But all right, so let's move on to Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Yeah. Also, one of my favorite movies of all time.
How is it? So let's lead into that. How is this one of your favorite movies of all time?
Well, it's very nostalgic for me because I moved here about 11 years ago. This was one of the first movies we saw in Georgia. Saw it on IMAX. It's probably one of my all-time favorite like movie-going experiences, seeing it in the IMAX screen. The visual effects were great, I thought, at the time. And that was before I even knew what King Kong was, obviously, because it's iconic. But I hadn't seen the original, so I was new to this story and about how I just like the three-act structure of the movie. I like the visual effects. I like the characters, especially. Naomi Watts does a great job. Andy Serkis does a great job portraying the King Kong and like the emotion of the actual creature, not just the action. It's a great adventure movie, I thought. And before we get into, let me just say too that a lot of people criticize it for being too long, and I just don't think that criticizing a movie for being too long is really fair at any point. I just don't understand that criticism because either a long movie is good or bad, you know. I mean, for me personally.
Yeah, I posted in my letterbox thing last night after I watched it. I'm like, this is a great movie, and I admire Universal, you know, putting this out. Not only giving Peter Jackson the $200 million to make the movie, but also allowing him to release a 3-hour and 7-minute cut in theaters. Cause I mean, now we live in an age where, you know, when Zack Snyder wants to release a 3-hour superhero movie, he has to cut it down 30 minutes. So it's like within 10 years, we just like went polar opposite.
Yeah.
So in retrospect,
I mean, there are so few 3-hour movies that are released that I don't mind at all when one is actually released, and either it's good or bad. I mean, I'm not going to criticize it for being long. I mean,
I don't mind it as long as you use that 3 hours pretty good. Like,
if there's a scene they could cut, I would have criticized that. But for a lot of 3-hour movies, I mean, usually there's nothing to cut out. I mean, they had to be 3 hours most of the time. I think King Kong's one of them. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big story, too, and it's a wide-ranging story. There's a lot of characters, a lot of things happening, and also you want to give the fans the ability to show an updated version of Skull Island now that, you know, we're making a Kong in a digital world, in a digital age now. So, and to me, most of the effects, like I would say 98% of the effects still hold up. Like
I think so too. Yeah.
There's a few shots that don't quite fit well. Like it still looks a little too blue green screen for me, but I was still impressed with the effects. The score is incredible. And Jackson's imagination runs so wild.
Yeah. And I even liked the first hour of it. I mean, people say that should have been shortened, but I love the introductions to the characters. Especially Jack Black. I like him too in the movie.
Well, you need that character's development so you understand why he's so hell bent on getting the movie made, and not only that, and not only after, you know, he loses the film to exposure. You need, you know, a reason why, you know, he's like hell bent on getting Kong on the ship. Mm-hmm. Like you need a good reason. Like he is risking it all, you know, for everything. And in the end, he still loses. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the company that, you know, gave him the rights to show Kong at the theater and buy all the chains and whatnot. I mean, they're probably still going to sue him and all that. And so while he is a jerk in the end, you understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah.
It's important to have dynamic characters.
What's that?
It's important to have dynamic characters.
Yeah. And they are, I think they definitely are. Yeah, and the only criticism I would have about it, it's very small, it's, what's his name? The character who's reading the book, Hearts of Heart of Darkness.
Jamie Bell, that's the
Jamie Bell, I can't stand him in that movie. I don't like Jamie Bell to begin with at all, any performance, it seems like, but...
Billy Elliot?
What's that?
You don't like Billy Elliot?
I haven't seen Billy Elliot. I just haven't liked him in various movies I've seen him in, but his storyline, like him reading the book, and him and the captain... Or not the captain, but the guy,
Ames anyway. Or Haynes.
That him. That could have been cut out, but that's about it, though. That's my only criticism of the movie. That's not a very big criticism because it's one of my favorite movies. So,
yeah, I mean, I was even watching the movie, going, "Is there really a way we can cut all this out? Because it really leads to nothing. Like it
that storyline.
Yeah, that storyline. It really leads to nothing.
The guy dies. The what did you say, Haynes?
I think so, Haynes.
Yeah. Haynes, yeah.
I think.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's my big thing is, and also I mean, it's not a massive criticism, but I do agree the movie is too long because after a while you do start to feel like, Jesus Christ, we're almost an hour in and we just started like in Skull Island.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other thing I like about the movie too is that with the action, the violence, they don't hold back at all. I mean, it's like, it's pretty brutal.
It's as brutal as you can get with a PG-13.
Pretty much, yeah. There's not like bursts of blood or anything, because obviously that would be an R rating. But they do everything else they could. I mean, especially the best scene, the most intense one, is that scene in the valley when they fall down and they're attacked by the bugs and the worms and that's an awesome scene.
Yeah.
And I heard on the special features at some point that that scene was actually in the original King Kong from 32 or 33. I can't remember the year it came out.
33.
But they didn't have time to film it, or they only filmed half of it, so they cut it out of the movie. They still have like a couple stills from it, so Peter Jackson used those stills to actually like adapt it into the movie. So it was supposed to be in the original, but it wasn't. So
okay, all right. I mean,
pretty cool.
So Brandon, you've seen the extended cut, right?
I have, yeah, once I think.
What is that cut like? Because I've only seen the theatrical cut of the movie.
They add about 20 minutes to it, I think, 20, 25 minutes. They add in the snake scene. There's a scene where they're on this river. No, not a river. It's like a lake. Yeah, snake attacks them. It's pretty cool. I mean, in terms of actual plot, though, I don't think they add much to the actual, like, storyline, because it's all there, kind of. I mean, just a few action scenes here and there. It's not much else they added to it, so I enjoy watching it, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to add. I wanted to ask because I've never seen that, and I thought that would be kind of nice to bring it in here.
Yeah.
So my other thing is, again, like Coppola, Jackson's kind of had a downhill slope after.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's funny because like I love the Lord of the Rings movies and King Kong, the Hobbit movies. I enjoyed two of them. I really enjoyed Desolation of Smaug. Battle of the Five Armies, not so much. The first one was decent. I thought it was good. So
Desolation's the only one of those I've enjoyed. And then, you know, he did The Lovely Bones, which is boring as shit.
I haven't seen that, yeah.
Oh my god. It's
but see, I'm not gonna watch it though if it's bad. So I'm like, I just skipped it, yeah. It's funny because I saw Heavenly Creatures, which is the movie he made in 94, and that was really bad. Have you seen that movie?
No, but Lovely Bones is essentially, it is so misguided in every way. Like, yeah. The book is I haven't read the book, but from asking a bunch of people that I know have read the book, the book is supposed to be way more violent, more like R-rated, yeah, and more intense, and the movie just skips all of that. Like, it for you know, this girl to basically live out her dreams in purgatory, or live out her like fantasies in purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow.
You didn't like the first Hobbit though?
I don't like the first Hobbit or the third Hobbit. Really? No.
Why not the first one?
What?
Why not the first one though?
The first one, it just feels like,
I can find flaws in it, but I enjoyed it though.
It feels like an extended cut of what the first movie should be. It's just, again, you know, Jackson just kind of going overboard with the story and characters and visuals. And also he was experimenting with 48 frames per second. So the movie doesn't quite look good in either format.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it never does for me.
I saw the 24 frames one. That was fine with me. I didn't notice any difference, but.
Yeah, but I mean, it really, at the end of the day, until you get to Desolation of Smog, nothing really exciting happens. Nothing really builds.
Well, I really enjoy Martin Freeman's portrayal of Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'll give the movie that. Like, Bilbo and the dwarfs, they're really good, and so is the cast. It's just, it feels like, again, Jackson kind of going overboard with everything because he feels like he has so much to say, and really it comes out as there really wasn't much to say, especially since there's two more of these things coming out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't agree with the way they split it in three parts. That was a bad idea. Because that's why I didn't like the third one. There was nothing else at that point.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, it would have been okay maybe if it was in two parts, but really, it's a very tiny book. Like, The Hobbit, it's a very tiny book, so there's no point in turning it into this large, epic, you know, 8.5 hour trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my criticism of all three of them is that they made a sharp turn to CGI instead of costumes, like in the original Lord of the Rings movies.
That's the other criticism, too.
CGI, they didn't work for me at all. That's my main criticism. But with that said, though, I like the first two, especially the second one. But the first one's good with me, yeah. I enjoyed it.
So now that we're going into Kong Skull Island, I have to say, now having seen Kong Skull Island, I think this King Kong, or Peter Jackson King Kong, is more of what I would want out of a Kong. It's more out of what I wanted Kong. I know they have to make him. I know they, in Kong Skull Island, they have to make him 100 feet tall because he's going to have to go against Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, this hit Jackson's Kong just looked a lot more like a gorilla, and he looked like, you know, he had been, you know, beaten, scarred. I mean, he looked like he's been through shit.
Yeah, hold on one second. One second.
So, that was kind of my thing, is I don't know why. So going into this, I don't know why,
They went
more human style. They went more, I'm talking about the Kong, by the way. They went more similarly designed of the very early 1933 version. Brandon, did you catch all that?
I didn't know. I was trying to talk to my dad. He was coming in. Yeah. Okay. Say it again. Sorry.
It just, you know, the Jackson's Kong just looked a lot more like a gorilla, and this one kind of looked more like an homage to the 1933 version. Mm-hmm. But I still prefer Kong to look like a I want him to look like a gorilla. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to just feel like a person just walking around on his two. Like, he's supposed to be on his four. Like, we rarely in Kong Skull Island see him on his fours.
You know? Yeah, I didn't mind the change, because I like how they did something different with it.
I don't know. It felt more real
Yeah.
And Jackson's Kong for him to be on his fours and be completely scarred and to be more of an aggressive, you know, creature.
Yeah, I prefer the 2005 one personally. I think it's a better movie.
Yeah, me too. Well, but, yeah.
With the new one though, I mean, I enjoyed that one too quite a bit. I especially visually, I love this new one. The cinematography is great, especially the way they portray the 1973.
The year,
just the atmosphere of Vietnam. So, characters are pretty good in this new one. Samuel Jackson, especially. I guess I just like the original. Besides the nostalgia for me, it's just I just love the three-act structure of King Kong from 2005. Just the opening, the on Skull Island, and then how they take him back to New York City. I just love the way they do that in, you know, three acts. This new one, it was all pretty good except for the fact that what was it? I didn't have many problems with this new one. It's one of those I probably won't watch again, though, anytime soon. It's just, yeah, I mean, action's pretty good. I mean, but nothing really that memorable, you know? So, great monsters, yeah, in this one.
Yeah, but I still prefer Jackson's Kong, even though I admire, even though this has a very good epic scale. Like, I love the scale of Kong Skull Island, but then again, I like the scale of both of these. Like, I love the scale and the scope. But to kind of, you know, wrap this up so I don't go too far into this, because we're about to discuss Kong Skull Island in the next episode.
Yeah, I probably won't be on that one because I don't have much to say about it. Like I said, I enjoyed it quite a bit, but
yeah, that's fine.
That for me.
Yeah, that's fine. But I enjoy it a lot, this new one, as far as the other ones. And this is going to be kind of our final question because I got to start the next one in a few. How does this pay homage really well to not only Apocalypse Now, but to all the other Kong movies that we've gotten in the past? I know you've only seen Jackson's Kong. I don't know if you've seen, did you see the 33 Kong?
I did. Yeah. I don't like it at all. Actually. I really don't like the original.
Okay.
Everybody does. I appreciate the effects, but I don't understand the appeal of the people, why people like it so much, but
it's a classic thing.
I guess so. But I mean, I appreciate the special effects and that and Wizard of Oz, but with these movies, they're just not that enjoyable for me. I don't know.
I think it's
There isn't a story at all. That's why I'm so surprised by.
I think it's more of a visual, not visual. It's more of a just like appreciation for film.
I guess so. Yeah.
You have to keep in mind how groundbreaking that movie was for its time. So I think it's just an appreciation of the film.
Yeah, sure. But being an homage, though, they definitely pay homage to Apocalypse Now in several scenes, especially the helicopter scenes, just the overall color scheme. That kind of the orange, green, yellow kind of like atmosphere, you know. Mm-hmm. In terms of paying homage to King Kong, I mean, like you said, the actual gorilla, it's very different than the other ones because in the previous movies, it's been more of a gorilla that kind of like they based off of actual gorilla movements. So that's kind of different. I mean, in terms of homage, though, I can't think of very many. I mean, this is kind of its own unique movie. I mean, it's not really like stealing anything from the previous King Kong movies. There isn't even dinosaurs in this one, you know. There's always been dinosaurs in King Kong movies.
Yeah, there's more creatures in this one.
Like bugs, you know.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I love the spider scene. That was really intense.
Nice little homage to Cannibal Holocaust.
I've heard people say that. I haven't seen the movie, but
me neither. Yeah, but I remember
really creepy in this one. I love the fact that was the plot of the movie, how King Kong was protecting them from the lizards underground.
Oh, skull crawlers.
Yeah, skull crawlers, but the lizard things with the creepy face. Yeah, those were really, really cool. That kind of plot dynamic.
Yeah. So, all right. So, do we have any more final thoughts on Apocalypse Now and Kong or Jackson's Kong?
Not really. I have curiosity. Did you play the video game when it came out in 2005?
No, Brandon, I don't play video games.
Yeah. Because it's fun to talk. That's a really fun to talk about. Because it's just, that was one of the video game tie-ins. Do you know anything about video game movie tie-ins? Like how they do those? Like every movie that comes out, like Blockbuster, they have a movie with
them. Yeah, I'm aware. Of those.
That one, it's an interesting game because some of it is very fun, but it is just very lazily put together. And it made a lot of money from people just hyped with the movie coming out. And I just, it was pretty disappointing playing it after the movie, after you see the movie. But anyway, yeah, you would know if you played it back then. But
I want to say I have something King Kong video game. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it is.
The other funny part is that the title was Peter Jackson's King Kong, the official video game movie. Or it was something, it was a really long, just crazy title. It was just, yeah,
good name. I actually do remember seeing that in a store. I do remember.
Yeah, it was
that.
Everywhere. It was really popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big letdown, basically, you know.
All right. So
it was fun. Yeah, fun. Good times.
Cool. So, all right. So that's it for our show this week, or not this week. There's one more that's coming out this week. But that's it for this episode. So Brandon, you don't have a Twitter, right?
No, I don't. I signed up for it once and I think it's there somewhere, but I've never used it. So,
all right, cool.
It's out there floating out and no posts, nothing. Yeah.
All right, cool. You can find me at Movie Kale, and then you can, follow me at The Youth Critic. And then you can also, follow the blog at www.theyouthcritic.weebly.com, and you can also, and please also follow KHC Network at KHC Network, and please subscribe to KHC Network on iTunes and Stitcher and Podbean, and please leave a comment and let us know how we're doing. All right, thanks everyone. We will be back with you in another day or two with Kong Skull Island.